Have you ever heard the sound of freedom? Have you ever heard the sound of freedom?
You are listening to The Flip Side with Noah Filipiak, connecting the reality of the gospel to the grit of life. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/NoahFilipiak or at NoahFilipiak.com/give.
Hey, and welcome to episode 18 of the Flipside podcast. Sad, isn't it? You're like, this was supposed to be the episode where the full recording studio was out and the sound sounded good, and it was going to be a real episode because Noah promised that last time. I can go back, I could cut out that excerpt and hold him to it. And all I hear is the bad audio again because he has his headphones hooked into his laptop as he records this. That's right, friends. Sometimes life does not go according to plan. And as much as I wanted to do a full podcast episode and not filler content, didn't happen. I'm still living with my in-laws. So good news. Let me update you a little bit. Let me give some fresh content. I finished working at the rental house, just like I said would happen last episode. So that is a huge, huge answer to prayer. Relief, literally one of the hardest things I've ever done. It was 9 months. It was agonizing mentally and emotionally. It was a rental house. It was a ministry house. We were helping people out that needed a cheap place to live, and it was a family that went to our church, actually, and they just destroyed the house. Yeah, it was bad. I don't like talking about it, but it gives you context to what we've been through. It took 9 months to fix it. It's done. It is up for sale right now, and that's amazing. So, taking some time, honestly. So I talked about limits a few episodes ago, and you know, when you do something like that, you have no, I mean, your margin, your limits are all just shot to pieces. And I know it's going to take some time to get recharged, to take time off, to take Sabbath, to get that time back with the Lord and to get that reserve sort of back, even just personal recreation time. It was, I mean, all summer I didn't do any of the things that I enjoy doing, that I normally do. Golfing, fishing, going to the Cincinnati Reds games, all that stuff, most of that stuff besides golfing I do with my kids. And so there's a lot of catching up to do. And, what was the other thing? So that was huge. It's a huge thing that is done and over with. The next huge thing hasn't happened yet. We are moving into our house that we bought in Middleville. So episode 15, I chronicled that journey, how I ended up in Middleville. We finally were able to close on that house this last Monday because we were able to close on our primary residence that we sold in Lansing. But what that means is I still live at my in-laws for another week, and it is really hard to set up equipment here and to do a real episode. And the last couple weeks have just been filled with a bunch of extra stuff at work and extra stuff. Here's one of the exciting extra things that I need to talk to you about here on the podcast. As you know, I have led in the past Beyond the Battle online small groups. So beyondthebattle.net, these are groups, some of you I know heard about it on the podcast and then joined a group, which is awesome. These are groups that I've led through my book, Beyond the Battle, and they have been awesome and fruitful, but they take time and they take energy, and I was ready to not do them anymore because I started this full-time job that I'm doing now as a young adult, one of the young adult pastors at Ada Bible Church, and something's got to give at some point, right? And there's only so many evenings of the week you can give up for ministry and those sorts of things. So what we're going to be doing, instead of pulling the plug on the groups, which would be sad because they are very fruitful and just there's transformation happening there, is that a couple of my alumni guys are leading those groups. And I am going to be present in week number one. So if you join the group, you'll see me and get to hang out with me in week number one. And then in the last week, which is week number seven. And I am confident that the groups are going to be excellent and still transformative. And so that's the shift that we made. It's a shift of limits. It's a shift also, I think, for the future. It's going to create even more fruit and even more transformation, raising up a team of people to do this Beyond the Battle ministry. So what I want you to know is those groups are open. They're open. They start at the towards the end of October, so you don't have much time. That's why I want to really make sure in this episode you heard this. BeyondTheBattle.net. Check it out. If you have any questions, just email in and I can help walk you through those things. I'm also throwing in a free leader guide now, which is not on the website yet, but it will be soon. But just so you know, if you sign up, you get a $50 leader guide. That's for later. If you want to lead a group of guys in your local context, you'll have the $50 leader guide given to you for free. That's good. So do the next episode for you a little bit, and then I'll tell you about this episode, what you're about to hear. So next episode, I will be in Middleville. I will have a house. I will have a home office. How about that? I will have I'm calling it my podcast studio. I'm calling it the studio because it sounds fancy and cool, even though it's really just going to be my recording equipment set up on my desk. But it will never move. It'll never have to be unplugged again. And that's amazing. And so I will do Noah's rant on the Chevy commercials, which I've told you about for about 5 episodes now. I'm going to be eventually interviewing my friend Jason Ridouti still. I have a brand new segment that I'm going to be introducing. It's going to be the Flipside Book Club. Yeah, so you'll be hearing more about that. If you want to know, the first book we're going to go through, Mere Sexuality by Todd A. Wilson. So if you want to jump in on that, go get the book now, but I'll be telling you more information about that. I think the book club's going to be awesome. I'm hoping it's something we're going to just keep doing, like book after book after book. I want to read more books, and this is, I read books better when there's accountability to read a book, like if I'm in a seminary class. So I'm just going to create the seminary class, basically, and invite you to be in it with me. So we're going to be talking about that and kicking that off. Next episode, I am going to be talking about, you never know, it might change, but I think I'm going to be talking about the right kind of blindness. And just talking about John 9, and there's this little section in there, but talking about how much we need God, like, and about prayer, and so many Christians and churches, particularly, I think the evangelical church, which is my church sort of tribe, so to speak, my upbringing, we talk about prayer, and depending on God, and we do sermons on it, maybe podcast episodes like I'm going to do, but I'm going to be talking about, like, that actual daily recognition of our just total depravity and our total need for God and how to rely on Him rather than just relying on ourselves. So that's at some point soon, I will be talking about that and how we inadvertently just rely on ourselves a whole bunch. So look forward to those things. In the meantime, you're welcome to email the show, podcast@beyondthebattle.net. Today, what I'm doing is I'm going back into the podcast archive. I interviewed, when I was doing, prior to the flip side, I had what I called the Beyond the Battle podcast, and it was just about things relating to my book. And I interviewed a friend of mine, Damon Seacott. I had actually just met Damon prior to this interview. I talked to him one time. A friend of mine introduced me to him. And now Damon is one of my mentors. I talk to him almost weekly, and it's been just incredible. And so I wanted to bring back this interview, give it some more exposure, because I think it's just really fruitful and really helpful. Damon is a guy who's single, and I don't know how old Damon is. I don't remember if he says it in his interview. If he's listening to this right now, he's laughing. He's older than me. I can tell you that. he'd really be a generation above me, maybe a half a generation. I'll give you that, Damon. He's maybe a half a generation above me, but he committed to singleness, I think at the age of 23, and so he just talks about what that's like to be single and celibate and walking with Jesus. And that's a huge message that needs to be out there, both for people that are single and for people that are married. Because often in the church, we stigmatize singles, and often singles feel stigmatized. And I think I talk about this in the interview with him, but we most sexual purity sort of teachings out there. They just say, well, just get married. Just direct that towards your wife. Well, what if you're single? And again, Jesus was single and Paul was single. And so there's, I think there's not a ton of voices out there of singles who are helping other singles and helping the church at large know how to walk with singles. And from learning from Damon's story, married and single guys alike, you're going to learn, not just guys, by the way, sorry. Come on, Noah. Come on, Philippiac. Men and women alike who are single or who are married. Sorry, I'm getting beyond the battle mode and men's groups and whatnot. But this certainly applies to everybody. So I'll stop talking because I'm not helping out. I'm not helping myself right now. I'll turn it over to my interview with Damon. And then when the interview is over, the episode will be over. I will talk to you next time. It will. I know. I've never lied to you before. It will be a real episode. I promise you that. I will see you on the flip side. Well, as I mentioned, we have our very first guest on the Beyond the Battle podcast. Everyone's just had to put up with me by this whole time by myself. So finally, we have a not in studio friend, but Damon Seacott and I are chatting via Skype today. I am in Lansing, Michigan. And Damon, why don't you jump in and just tell us a little bit about yourself? And I think I know where you're talking to me from Indianapolis, but correct me if I'm wrong on that. But just introduce yourself to the, I always say people are intimidated to email their questions into the show because we have billions of podcast listeners. It's really not billions. So don't be intimidated, but introduce yourself to us and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure thing. My name is Damon. I am in Indianapolis, Indiana right now. I have been here the last year helping with my sister who has cancer, and that's been a privilege to be able to do that. I grew up on a beef and dairy farm here in Indiana in a Quaker family, and have maintained my Quaker traditions and love that aspect of my faith. I went to Indiana University and then Ball State for my graduate work, and have worked in higher education since 1988. Before that, I was in mental health for a bit, and at Spring Arbor University, I was there from 1992 until December of last year. And the last 12 years of that time, I was the chief of staff for the university, which meant I ran the day-to-day operations of the university and worked directly with the president and the board of trustees. And that was a great experience. And for my life, I have, back when I was 23, I decided to be single and live my life in a simple life, and that's what I've done.
That's awesome. So you were in Michigan for a long time. That's
I was
where I am now. So we got a lot of pure Michigan stuffed into you. You versus your Indiana years, but I see you've gone back home. You don't like winter 7 months out of the year. It's you like normal. I grew up in Ohio where there's four seasons of the year, unlike Michigan where there's winter for over half the year and then, you know, some summer mixed in there, but that's about it. So, yeah, man, well, that's awesome. Thank you so much. And so you said that when you were 23, you decided to be single. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is because in my book, Beyond the Battle, which is the name of this podcast, I talk a lot about, well, the subtitle of my book is A Man's Guide to His Identity in Christ in an Oversexualized World. And I try throughout the book to always speak towards single men and married men, and different things apply in different ways. But one thing I was always frustrated with when I was single was all the books I read on, you know, there's different sort of lingo we use for it, but sexual purity, for lack of a better word, sexual purity books I read, they were all geared towards married guys. And usually the solution to the problem was, oh, go and get married, you know, that sort of thing. And I feel like the church has I don't want to put words in your mouth. I've just experienced this myself, and I've experienced it with counseling singles, where singles can often feel ostracized in the church. And my church tradition is different than yours, so I'll be curious to get into that with you. But it's hard, I think, as a married guy, for singles to take me seriously sometimes because they say, oh, yeah, you have a wife. You know, who are you to talk about, you know, staying sexually pure and that sort of thing? So walk me and listeners through a little bit that decision you made to be single and celibate, and what was that decision like, and I guess why did you make it, and what has it been like since then?
Okay. Well, I had a great college experience, loved being at IU, and was real involved with ministry there around the state of Indiana. When I got done with school, wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, and decided to spend time with one of my friends who was the Christian singer Rich Mullins, and we did a lot of hiking and just traveling around the country a bit, and had the opportunity to just learn a lot from him and talk to him about how he lived his life and why. And out of that just came the reality for me that I felt called to just invest in other people around me and to come alongside folks for my life. And what I believed for me was, I don't know that I had the strength and ability to be able to maintain a family and a wife and kids, and at the same time fulfill that commitment of serving others around me. And so decided that was what I was being called to do. And I don't know that that's a strength or a weakness. Yeah, it could be that I don't have the tenacity to be a husband. I don't know. But I've loved my life. I've loved the opportunity to come alongside folks and care for them. And when somebody has kids that are struggling and they need to get them away from home for a bit, they can send them to me for a couple months to be at a safe place and to, be able to walk along with them. When somebody's struggling with an issue in their life, I can drop everything and go spend time with them if they need, or vice versa, come and hang out with me. And so I don't have to spend a lot of time thinking about, okay, my work life, my personal life, my married life, my family life. It's just me, and so that's how I've kind of lived my life. And surprisingly, the places I've worked, specifically Spring Arbor for 25 years, they were very supportive of that and loved that that was who I was, and thought that was cool having somebody quirky like me, I guess, on staff. And ended up spending a lot of time with our male students who were very intrigued with the whole idea of being single, being at a Christian school. That's not the mentality for most folks, in that there's a lot of pressure actually to be married. And in the last few decades, with the ratio 60% women and 40% men, the guys have a lot of opportunities, and they can really explore that. So it was kind of a unique thing to have somebody who was single and chose to be single as an adult. And so that was a great opportunity for me. And the whole 25 years I was at Spring Arbor, I was privileged to live in community with male students, and just loved that. And that was just a great time in my life. I think it helped me to not become old and crotchety and self-centered and narcissistic. I think that, having to live with 20-year-olds for 25 years was just great for me. I mean, it challenged me and pushed me. And hopefully I did the same for the young men who chose to live with me.
Yeah. What advice would you give to someone who is single, male or female, and they hear your story and they're saying, okay, you chose singleness. So you chose singleness. It was a decision you made. And they haven't chosen singleness, but they are single. So it's like singleness has chosen them unwillingly, and they're struggling with it. There, you know, there's a longing they have to be married, and for whatever reason, they're not married. They're in a season of singleness. What advice would you give to someone who's in those shoes?
I would encourage them to, through mentoring or counseling or whatever, they need to be working on getting to a point where they're okay with being single,
yeah.
That they're okay with themselves, they're okay functioning on their own, because one of the brokenness of a marriage relationship is often the expectation of the partner to complete you or to, you know, envelop you or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that you have to be okay being single. And that doesn't mean that you have to accept that you're always going to be single, but you need to be okay with yourself. You need to be okay within your own skin. Because if you're not, your partner is probably not going to be okay with you at some point, because you're not complete. You're not, you know, you're not living life where God is working through you and you're hitting on all cylinders and everything like that. You're constantly looking for something else. And oftentimes when people do get married, their spouse doesn't fulfill some of the expectations they have. And then that creates a whole bunch of other different issues and those kind of things. So I think that would be my first encouragement to them, is to get to be okay being single. And then after that, I think living your life fully and completely and being involved and reaching out and helping folks and serving people and interacting with all types of people, old people, young people, kids, you know, being healthy in your relationships and not be, I'm very much against dating apps and all those kind of things. Yeah. So that's just a mess I have. But I think that you find the person to spend the rest of your life with by living your life and allowing people to see who you are and not being in a situation where you're trying to be somebody, because that's dangerous as well. But just being yourself. And I think as you do that, you're going to come along side people who are interested in you and want to get to know you. And then, you know, hopefully there's somebody who will be like, hey, you know what? I could put up with that for the rest of my life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you bring up a great point that there's this assumption. Well, there's the old, I think it's from Jerry Maguire, the line, you complete me, and this idea that we have that a romantic relationship will complete us. And we often look at marriage that way. And I hear marriage talked about in church that way. And I write a fair amount about my testimony in Beyond the Battle, where I almost got a divorce 3 years in to my marriage. And the main reason was, you know, my wife didn't complete me. And there was things I was expecting from her that I felt like I was entitled to because I had done things God's way. And I was really expecting my wife to give me a sense of validation and approval that only Jesus really could give me. And it hit me after the fact that two halves don't make a whole. And if someone like you mentioned has to become a whole person once they're single, and I feel like, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it feels like if you become a whole person when you're single and you stay single, you're still a whole person. And if you become a whole person when you're single and then you get married, you bring that whole personhood into your marriage. And so both options are good options at that point, because your wholeness came from a source in Christ that can't be taken away. It can't be changed. Whereas I just see a lot of couples, and I was one of these, where, man, it fluctuated so much based on the circumstances of my marriage. And so I was about to tap out. I was about to say, like, this idol in my life isn't fulfilling me, so I'm going to go find, you know, a new idol in my life. And I think a lot of singles look towards marriage. I know I did when I was single. We look towards marriage to be that fulfillment that, you know, it never actually can be.
Right. I agree.
For you, What I'm hitting on is from my background in the evangelical world that I grew up in. I feel like in the evangelical, and I guess Spring Arbor would fall into that as well, I think. Evangelical world, we sort of idolatrize marriage. We put it on a pedestal. I think we stigmatize people that aren't married. I'm not overly familiar with the Catholic tradition, but I know obviously in the Catholic tradition that priests, they commit to a vow of celibacy and singleness, and as do nuns. So there's that value placed on it in the church. I'm curious, in the Quaker tradition, were there, was singleness talked about? How was singleness treated? Was it, were there others who were making commitments to singleness the way you did?
You know, I wouldn't say that it's a high percentage, but I think within the French church, we talk a lot about the simplicity of life and the importance of being a complete person, yeah, with Jesus Christ as the most influential aspect of your life. And the whole idea of being genuine and being authentic and being yourself is very much important. And that really allowed me to be comfortable in being single. And a lot of my friends who are Quakers, they didn't rush out and get married right away. They were okay being single. The friends that I ran around with in college, I think the earliest one somebody got married was 5 years after college. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was just because the emphasis of you need that partner for the rest of your life and you need it right now. That just wasn't talked about in church at all for me, yeah, growing up. It was just much more your relationship with Jesus Christ. And yes, you may get married, you may not, but just being yourself is what is key.
Yeah. And I'll make a distinction for anyone listening out there. In the secular world, or whatever word you want to use, it's becoming more common to get married later. But in that sense, the singles are sleeping around with people. They're not getting married because they don't want to commit to one person. And this is a very different type of waiting on marriage, it sounds like. It sounds more like, I'm with Jesus, I'm whole in Jesus, and if I get married, I do. If I don't, I don't. And so, obviously, I know that's where you're coming from. And I think I find that, because usually there's one or two options. You either get married when you're 21, which is what I did, or you have people who are sleeping around, and then they might get married, you know, later in life. But their reasons for getting married later are very different than someone who's actually content, you know, in their singleness, which is what I hear you describing.
Yes. Yeah. And I should have clarified. I was, my 20s were in my 80s. Were in the 80s.
I hear
you. In the 80s. So it was a different time. Definitely a different time. And I think for right now, I think with young men, my situation is not necessarily one that's unique. I think a lot of young men are not rushing off into marriage. Unfortunately, they're going the way that you have described, and that they're promiscuous and they're, they're involved sexually out of marriage. But I think that commitment and that need for that commitment has weighed a bit in our society, especially.
Yeah. And then you also have young men today. Obviously, pornography is such a different dynamic today than it was in the 80s with, you know, the internet and how much pornography is there. And there's all kinds of studies being done on what this massive pornography use. So my testimony is seventh grade through college, I was looking at pornography on the family computer. Now you have kids getting smartphones, and you can get pornography on the video game systems. There's pornography in video games now, and the level and the intensity of the pornography. It's almost becoming normal in our society, which is very scary. And then, you know, there's things it's doing to men where they're, oh, I'm not interested in marriage because I have all this porn. And all that to say, I think for listeners who are single to know how different the type of singleness is that we're talking about here, where I believe that whether you're in a marriage that's maybe a difficult marriage, where there's not the intimacy that you hope there would be or whatever it may be, or you're single, I believe that our relationship with Christ and our relationship with the church can make us whole and really provide those needs we have for intimacy, where we don't have to look for it from promiscuity or from pornography. Whereas I think many today they see pornography almost as a given. If I'm single, well, of course I'm going to look at pornography because I'm not married. So that was me kind of rambling for a little bit there, Damon. But any thoughts on that, particularly as you worked with college students for a very long time. And as you know, particularly in that age, it's something that college students are dealing with. And what kind of advice would you give to someone struggling with pornography who's single?
Well, like you pointed out, today is just a new day. I mean, back in the 80s and before that, there was you had to make a conscious choice. Yeah. You almost had to be visible for pornography, because you had to go buy the magazines or you had to go to the whatever kind of stores and all those kind of things, you know. And then today there's so much anonymity in that, you know, you just pick up your phone and click, 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 and you're there. And I think that for young men who are trying to be pure sexually, that they need to do whatever it takes to avoid falling into that, because it does become a situation where you feel like it's controlling you. And, you know, I've met with young men who, they were vibrant, dynamic personalities, you know, when college started out, and then, you know, a year in, they've caught up into the pornography and they've lost their soul. And I know that's a strong statement, but they really are. They're just kind of zombie-like, you know. They just kind of walk around and they're really, you know, and they live for, you know, going back to the, you know, to the room and doing whatever they're going to do. And it's almost like, it feels like a vampire kind of thing, in that they need that to sustain them. And when they get to that point, they probably aren't going to be able to handle it on their own. And that's where I think, you know, organizations like Covenant Eyes and then, you know, people who are studying, you know, not just sexuality, but sexual dysfunction and sexual aggression. And I think that it's important to have in discussions with folks who are trained so they can help you deal with your appetite and work with that. You know, I have, you know, through the years I had guys who would, like, you know, if I'm in a bad situation or in the middle of the night or I'm tempted to do something, I'm going to call you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fine. You know, and of course they would never call, because when they are in that situation, they want to be in that situation. So they're not going to call, you know, that kind of thing. And then when I'd ask them, you know, then it would turn around and it'd be like, well, you're not trusting me and you're, you know, you're on me and I don't like this anymore because you're being too confrontive with me. And it's like, and I just ask a question. So I think that, you know, we need to appreciate the fact that pornography for college guys, you know, ages and 20s and stuff, it's a point where they're going to have help getting through it, because I don't think they're going to be able to do it on their own. And reality is they've probably been doing it for, you know, 6 years maybe when they get to college even. So, you know, you're talking about a decade of abuse of your heart, mind, and soul and body. And so I think that we're at that point where you have to have some things in place. And college campuses need to take responsibility for that too, and that they need to have opportunities for their men and women now with pornography to get the support that they need. And it can't be light support. It can't be just, you know, it's got to be difficult questions. It's got to be difficult conversations. And it's got to be discipline. I mean, that's something that people don't like these days. They don't want to be disciplined at something, but you're not going to break that pattern unless you are disciplined.
Yeah. Well, you think about discipline, and it's a great word because we often think of it like the punishment with discipline, but discipline is what it's what makes the best athletes in the world the best athletes in the world. They have discipline in their lives. It's what makes the best musicians in the world the best musicians in the world, because they have discipline in their lives. They train themselves. And I think of the text, I can't remember the references off the top of my head, but where scripture says, train yourselves to be godly. And this is an active discipline. And yeah, when it comes to pornography, particularly, the culture today has shifted so much that if we don't have intentional discipline, we're going to get eaten alive by it. And that's a great point you bring out. I know for me, when I was in the middle of my struggle, I wanted out so badly, and I couldn't figure out how to get out. And my hope is that those listening that are looking at pornography, that they want to get out. That's the Holy Spirit living inside of you is convicting you and saying, this is messing you up, and you need to get out, to reach out for help and to not. It's sad, but it's no longer that you're not in the minority anymore. If you're struggling, it really is a common struggle. So I'll throw in a couple of quick resources here while we're on that topic. One of them, you mentioned Covenant Eyes. If you want to do 2 months for free of Covenant Eyes, you can do that at coveyes.com/beyond. That's coveyes.com/beyond. And that'll get you going on 2 months for free. And also we'll mention that all of the Covenant Eyes software is switching over to screen accountability March 5th. That's been announced, and you can get on that beta version early through their website. So what that means is not only will my accountability partner get my list of websites I went to, they're going to get actual screenshots of places I visited. The screenshots are blurred out so that security isn't breached, and so that if I went to something explicit, you know, that isn't being sent to tempt my accountability partner. But I'm telling you, it's a huge essential tool to utilize. And I do hope that more and more college campuses, as you said, take this very seriously, because that's also a time of great change. It's a time when we're open to change, and God is really working on us. So I appreciate you bringing that up. With that too, if anybody wants to do 7 weeks with me about overcoming pornography or just sexual sin in general, beyondthebattle.net is a good place to go for that. So back to singleness. I have a question here, Damon, from one of my listeners, and I normally do a mailbag segment on the podcast. I think I tried to answer this one a few episodes ago as a married guy, and I don't think I did a very good job, so I'm going to spring it on you, okay? You ready for it? All right.
Yes.
I'm going to read his whole email. It's a little, maybe a little long, but I'll repeat the question at the end that I think is most most prevalent, I think, within this. So this is from Kenneth, and he says, what does living, quote, beyond the battle look like in long-term singleness? I use the term long-term singleness because even though a large percentage of people get married, the odds of getting married in the near future for him is slim. Those of us who are single need to commit to walking in purity, sobriety, holiness for the long term. Perhaps a related question could be, and here's where I think we'll spend our time. Some of the advice singles are given about sexual purity may feel like simply, quote, stuffing sexual desires. When taken to its full conclusion, this might suggest living asexually. how should singles relate to their sexuality and or steward the gift? The easy answer of, quote, get married and stop asking such hard questions, unquote, can seem rather trite. So I'll let you breathe that in for a second, Damon. I did not give Damon a heads up that I was going to ask him these things. So I think the root of that question is some of the advice singles are given about sexual purity may feel like simply stuffing sexual desires. When taken to its full conclusion, this might suggest living asexually. How should singles relate to their sexuality and or steward the gift?
All right.
Take your time.
Yeah. I think that, first of all, single folks need to be okay with their sexuality and they need to explore it, but not bringing in another person and not doing things that are unhealthy or sinful or pornographic, but just realizing they are a sexual person and understanding what that means and understanding, you know, when they are feeling sexual and understanding the physical aspects of their body that would cause them to become aroused and all those kind of things. I think that that's important for a single person to do and not avoid, because that doesn't do any good to avoid. Sure. And that's what gets a lot of people in trouble, because they do avoid. And so I think, you know, appreciating the fact that you do have a sexuality, I think also then helping yourself understand where sexuality fits in. My big concern with folks who identify themselves in a certain way sexually, that it's their whole identity. And I believe that your sexuality is not your whole identity. It's an aspect of your life. It's not, it's not who you are.
Yeah.
And so I think that for single folks, as they walk through their sexuality, they need to put it in perspective and they need to have help with that if they're having trouble with that. But it is definitely something that's a big deal in our lives. And the younger folks are going to struggle with it more than the older you get. I mean, the older you get, your sexuality is more, you know, understood and a little easier to control, maybe as far as who you are. But I think another thing for single folks to do is, you know, instead of going to pornography, which puts sexuality in a pretty perfect or, you know, exaggerated situation, they need to think through what sex and sexuality is, you know, when they do move to being married, and it's okay to do that. And that the whole idea of, you know, the person next to you's breath stinks in the morning and they maybe make weird noises in the middle of the night and keep you awake, or they, you know, and, you know, they get on your last nerve and they are interested in doing something with you sexually and you're not interested in them. I mean, we don't talk about that stuff.
Right.
And so I think single people need that perspective so they understand that, you know what, I'm not being punished because I'm not having sex. I am in the situation in my life where I am single and this is how I am going to live my life. And how can I do that healthy, in a healthy way? And I think, you know, St. Francis and, you know, some other folks over the centuries have had great insight and great wisdom, you know, and Paul in the Bible. You know, it's like, that's not just people having sour grapes and saying, oh yeah, it's great. And I appreciate the fact that sometimes people give too easy answers or flippant answers that are annoying. And that's where I would say, well, don't be passive, you know, come back at them and say, no, I want a straight answer. I want a good answer. And if you can't give it to me, help me find somebody who can help me, you know. And I think that, you know, a single person talking to a friend who is in a healthy marriage, having a healthy sex life, that's a great conversation to have with them, you know, same sex people talking. I think that needs to be a significant thing. But, and then I think also then talking to other single people about, you know, how do you live your life as a single person? You know, what is your life filled with?
Yeah.
You know, and making sure that you're not spending a lot of time just sitting around whining and like video games and stuff like that, because, you know, I am not married. It's like, you know, I'm not going to be interested in somebody as a married partner who are not fulfilled and developed and having a great life and living a great life. I mean, that's just a something that single people sometimes forget. You know, you can't just depend on your looks or your personality. You know, you need to have a life. You need to be, you know, a complete person if somebody's really going to be interested in you.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great answer. And I think about that guy sitting alone in his apartment playing video games, you know, and I think of the isolation that can happen when you're single. And you make a great point of saying, hey, if you have to be someone living like a real life if you want to kind of attract a spouse in general. But I also think, you know, Damon, when I look at your life, I hear someone, when I talk to you, I hear someone who lives a full life. You know, you're someone who's living a full life. And I think there's a lot of single people who are not living a full life. You know, they're probably more guys this way, but it's sitting around playing video games, not there's types of intimacy out there that aren't just romantic intimacy. We're wired for relationship, we're wired for community and these sorts of things. And so I'm going to use that to segue. And frankly, as a married person, and I write about this in Beyond the Battle, I don't knock marriage. Marriage is good. So is singleness. They both have their benefits. They both have their struggles. I think Satan's biggest deception is he gets all the single people to want to be married, and he gets all the married people to want to be single, and nobody's ever content with where they are and the gifts, you know, that they've been given. But as a married guy, you were saying this earlier in the interview, where it's very hard for me to go hang out with anybody at night because I have three young kids and I have responsibilities to put them in bed and to help around the house and, you know, these sorts of things. And I don't want to say in a sinful way, but I do envy the freedom that single people have to go and be in community and be social and go minister and go help people. And when I hear single people who aren't doing that, they're just sitting around playing video games, I'm like, no, like, you have to be the one that does it. Like, I can't go do it. We need you, you know, to go do it. So in sort of an indirect way, I'm going to use that to transition into my last question. And that is just, what advice would you give, Damon, to the church on how the church should handle singles and singleness?
Okay. My guidance to the church would be, don't. my advice to the church is focus on community. Focus on understanding that people have to work into the community and figure out how they fit in. And as a single person or as a married person or as a divorced person or a widowed person, you know, I mean, I think that it kind of goes back to the whole thing of what's your identity. You know, don't pull singleness out as your identity, because it's not. There are going to be special needs and special things that, you know, you may need to spend some time talking with someone about. And today in our culture, we've gone from, you know, Christians being anti-counseling and anti-medication for stuff to where now, you know, I think 80% of college students have had some type of a mood inhibitor or something like that by the time they get to school. Or, you know, don't quote me on that. I don't know, it's high, very high. And so you've got folks who, you know, they're anxious, they got personality disorder, they got this, they got that, you know, I mean, they can get anything going on. And so all of that kind of stuff pulls in and starts to affect who you are and how you live out your life and how you live out your faith. And in a church, I think that we need to look at, how do we walk through with our folks in living in community? And when we have folks who are single, I think that you need to have opportunities for them where they're doing things with married folks where they're doing things with other people of the same sex and not the opposite sex, but they're having that opportunity to women do things as women, men doing things as men, and not being exclusive and saying, okay, well, all the male guys that are single, they're going to go do this. And then all the females that are single, they're going to go do this, you know, those kind of things. Because some churches get the idea of like, okay, our singles ministries need to be unique in that we don't want to be a dating thing. So we're going to have single women and single men, and they're going to do their things and that kind of, and so it just gets really crazy. And I think that, you know, the whole idea of looking at it is, you know, and like make everybody in your church read Bonhoeffer's Life Together, mm-hmm. and then start to realize that, okay, there's a lot of junk in that I need to be loving that person next to me, even though I can't stand them and that kind of thing. And it's like that kind of stuff, I think, gives people much more energy and much more meat to hold on to and to grasp than, you know, having it where you're talking about, well, what do you feel like tonight? Because you don't have somebody to go home to. I mean, you can talk about that with your friends and stuff like that. But I think with the church needs to be about helping us develop our whole life. And so we have a soul that's vibrant and dynamic. And so that's my answer.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I was just thinking about this as we were wrapping up. I have a mailbag on the show. It's podcast@beyondthebattle.net. And whether he likes it or not, Damon is going to be my phone a friend. So if you have any, if you hear this interview and if you want to ask Damon any questions about singleness, I'll give my crack at him as well. But I just think there's something really awesome and authentic about someone who's intentionally living, Damon, the way you are in this life of singleness and following Christ. And so if you want to email the mailbag and you want Damon to answer it, I won't have him back on to answer every single question, but I will shoot him the email and see what he thinks, and I'll relay the answer, you know, to listeners. Because one thing I want this podcast to be is just a place where you know you're not alone. And granted, it's just a podcast. It's not like we're really hanging out person to person, but I just think so many who are struggling with sexual sin, relational sin, struggling in their marriages, struggling in singleness, with pornography, whatever it is, with sexuality, just feel alone. And I just want to normalize that. I think this is an area of our discipleship. This is just a normal part of our discipleship. Yep. And so we need to talk about it. And so use the mailbag for that. And that's really what this podcast is for. So Damon, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and being transparent and vulnerable with billions of listeners to this podcast. It's been really, really awesome. So thank you, friend.
The Flip Side with Noah Filipiak is a South Francis Press production. Copyright Noah Filipiak. www.noahfilipiak.com. Theme music by Kyle Lake at K Lake Music. Use with permission. Please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever podcasts are found. Souls needing revivals. What am I do? Influence like the cup full of that Bombay. Kelly's to them Tom Hanks. Lexus to them Andres. Hoping they check in my inner reverence. Stressing for leverage. That they see the king's tracks on the payment leading to heaven. Yow, yow, dripping in that gall that don't perish. People selling fake, see the green around their belly. Taking refuge in his hand, see his palms, my living quarters. Close them when I'm finished, it is time to bring me closer. That's no purgatory, cause you're in or you're out. When you see him in the clouds, then you know it's going down. Raise them. They've been sleeping for some ages. Now all God's babies so confused by this hatred. Pulpit preachers shouldn't aim to be A-list. Money probably long, but short is with your days. Have you ever heard the sound of freedom? Pointing to redemption, to the one who got them splinters. Cause that cross is nothing pretty. So why the beauty pageants? And caught up in emotions and following your passions. Talking that freedom, all people need them more than an Easter. Or coffee shop discussions, debating over baristas. Please, sir, this is why we ain't
locked up. Even when they do the autopsy, they still see him. Freedom, freedom, freedom coming quickly. Bars from the spirit, put it through the preamp and mix it like a chemist. Put it in the airwaves and hoping that they hear it. If there's some confusion, then I hope you see him clearly. Raise them, raise them, raise them. They've been sleeping for some ages. Now all God's babies so confused by this hatred. Pulpit preachers shouldn't aim to be A-list. Money probably long, but sure it's